December 1st, 1983, Jan Law interviewed by Kay Briegel in his office in Long Beach.
I won't hook her up, not to worry.
I have in my hand U.S. Naval Base, Los Angeles, California, benchmark records. This happened to be 7th of November, 1949. And the Navy, I guess, was harassed by elevations, great abundance of them, on a piece of paper and losing shuffling. So they adopted that they were going to use a great big piece of paper, like a billboard, and record on that elevations. So there was a source, and they wouldn't quarrel among themselves about the source that they were doing. And they had something to be said for them. I enjoyed them very much. They did represent a finality. Somebody couldn't come to you and tell you, well, no, this isn't right. You ought to use this material over here, because the big piece of paper were the gospel on elevations. And I am tossing in the bottom of the Hollinger quite a number of big sheets, schedules of benchmark elevations, principally prepared by United States Navy.
They don't represent single benchmarks. There are several benchmarks on each one. They represent the errors. Why are there so many of them?
Well, there was a lot of benchmarks, and
yeah.
We'll say this is a new traverse. Probably they're by traverses. Of which, more or less, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, call it 10, 10, 20, 30, 40, maybe. Well, there were 40 stations along a traverse, and this happens to be referred to Title 8. That is another story, but this would be a main traverse. You ask the question, what's a traverse? I think you can find the folds. You better get a chair.
Okay, go ahead.
I will tell you a story. It's an interesting story.
You've got a chair back there,
haven't
you?
Hmm?
You've got a chair back there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we shall begin at the beginnings. A tide gauge hung on the hard rock of Palos Verdes, San Pedro, called the Outer Harbor. After it is read daily for 21 years and proved itself stable against all other benchmarks, tide gauges, which have been in place for more than 21 years, that tide gauge is declared, in this case, Title VIII, and is the absolute beginning of all elevations. In this case, there was an earlier San Diego, an earlier, I think even Monterey, and San Francisco and Seattle, and Title VIII has been declared stable. A traverse, as organized by all surveyors, is a line of elevations, and as run in Wilmington by the Coast and Geodetic Land Survey. That is the ultimate authority on precision elevations. And they follow a procedure where the traverse starts at a benchmark, Title VIII, runs out to noon, and comes back on a different traverse, on a different line, and must close at very close to zero in order for that traverse to be declared an official survey. So, by coast and geodetic provisions, all traverses must be run in a day. All traverses must be closed. Closed, namely, you start in and call it zero and go through 10, 20 feet uphill and come down 10, 20 feet and come back to your start point of origin, and you must close at very close to zero. That is a traverse. Off of that traverse, there may be just pure extensions. Next day, they pick up, having started in the west and traversing east, having gone from San Pedro, jumped across the channel, come down Terminal Island, to about the first station, I believe, was about the Commodore Heim Bridge. That's the big lift. And they picked up there and made another traverse down to the Pontoon Bridge and back. I'm not sure I have those distances. Sounds too far for the one day to get to the Commodore Heim and back. But that traverse must close. Then off of that, side traverses that ran down to the big graving dock and down clear out on the Navy Mole and back. So when you see an abundance of these large schedules, which look like we have 40 stations on them, usually they will be, a sheet of paper will be confined to a traverse, and a traverse has many points, and included in this material are the traverse designations, a map showing the aerial position of the traverses, and the identification on the map of a traverse, which can then be read against these large schedules to show you what were the readings. The report I made, in which I showed the rate of subsidence and the total subsidence on these mathematical curves. The rate of subsidence is the bell-shaped curve, knowledgeable to everybody in education and throughout time. That report came about by reason of Sam Roberts was interested particularly was injection, stopping subsidence, because we and everybody else recognized that it was slowing down. And if it was slowing down perceptibly, then the contribution to injection, pressure maintenance, in slowing down might have been nil. And Sam Roberts was the kind of guy that didn't want to keep talking about subsidence, so now slowing down, starting to arrest subsidence, when subsidence on its own hook was doing just that. And you can sympathize. He would hate to be dealing in generalities that were vapid or of no consequence. Finally, there came a point when, in the course of injection, you actually had called rebound. Rebound was any vertical distance of which the surface of the ground had reached over and above its lowest point in that it reached in its descent from much higher elevations. And obviously, when we now have a rebound of a foot and map it, why, injection definitely had an influence on the rate of subsidence. The point about my paper is that there was only two more feet to go, and as I've told the Chamber of Commerce, that if in the case of Turnbull Island, where the Edison plant sits very close to the center of the bowl of subsidence and is maybe 30 feet, then if you were going to have to fill 30 feet, two more feet didn't make any difference. 28 feet at that time was only going to go to 30. Well, if you're going to fill from 28 feet on up to sea level, filling from 30 feet didn't represent all of that if you had a great deal hanging on it. So, that question is still with us. And it's an unknown, and as I've said, people don't examine it. It isn't a question that people care to look at, care to spend much time with. I have in front of me Repressurization Progress Report, Shipyard Area Flood, Wilmington Oil Field, prepared by the Long Beach Naval Shipyard. Report number 5, October 31st, 1959. And it is a serious report. I think it's fortunate it says report number 5 in that probably in the annals of naval records and naval records, report number 1 through 4 should be available. But there was a different approach from almost exclusively City of Long Beach. I'm pausing now to think about. I've now come across in this suitcase full of at least not bound or paperback or particular volumes, but shorter pieces and correspondence. And here I come, a rather thick letter and study made on the subsidence in the Baldwin Hills Reservoir, written by a consultant under retention to Chevron. Here's a letter from the lawyers acting for Chevron on the Baldwin Hills Reservoir disaster. As an illustration of my earliest point, these are the benchmark locations, and if you knew how to read them, you would know the traverses that the Harbor Department survey, but they occupied these, and there are another map that show that this is a traverse, and this is a traverse, and here is a map, Harbor Department, showing key benchmarks that they have chosen to talk about, and rather than talk about all the benchmarks, they chose to talk about a few of them. There's quite a bit of correspondence shows up. Pacific Fire Rating Bureau. And it was very serious in that many people, many insurance companies refused to write and stopped writing insurance on metropolitan downtown Long Beach. And the Pacific Fire Rating Bureau was the lead. I won't comment on clippings. In the past, in the case, I have given you a report on the quantitative determination of subsidence arrestment within the harbor area. That was inspired and authorized, the payment for it was by Sam Roberts, assistant to the mayor, for if that was the transition time when the mayor and city council were taking the oil away from the harbor department in putting it into an oil department under the jurisdiction and direction of the city council. And there are other copies of which are more refined than this. This was the first draft, at least in report covers, of what I've given you as the quantitative determination of subsidence arrestment. And this, if you please, is a nuisance duplication. Unless there's something to be said, it was the first draft of which later drafts were made. This, unfortunately, this being, we a ex-subsidence engineer, Dennis Allen, and also ex or temporary manager of the oil department and a geologists have worked, the two of us collaborated to do a report for the Atomic Energy Commission by reason of being retained by Bechtel, wherein they wanted an atomic energy desalting plant offshore Huntington Beach, offshore to the Bolsa Gun Club, what is now Bolsa State Beach. And there is subsidence in Huntington Beach, directly located over the greatest withdrawal in the offshore Huntington Beach oil field. Very little onshore, maybe none. Well, maybe a little bit, but nothing spectacular. So this mislabeled an analysis of the limits of uncertainty in a black ring binder, but it has all of the illustrations, and I believe I have the complete report, which is extracted from a report about 3 or 4 inches thick that Bechtel turned over to the federal government as their total findings on the amount of risk, the uncertainty associated with building an atomic energy plant in a bowl of subsidence, the bowl being Huntington Beach bowl. I have a bellows envelope, which is also page after page of elevations. In this case, as a loose leaf form prepared and the basic record of the Harbor Department. Here, vertically, the stations, and horizontally, have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at a quarterly, April, November, February, May, August. Semi-annual, I'm sorry. So you have a loose leaf book, and the as time goes on, you have more pages showing the elevation at a later date against a fixed left-hand column, which the Navy rejected with their large pieces of paper. And in this bellows envelope are a lot of the Long Beach cities. For Stanford Research Institute, quite a study was made in there of the condition of casing as it penetrated and as subsidence before this big oil field, which was about 8 miles long, 3 miles wide. The oil sands started in about 2,800, 3,000 feet, extended on down to 7,000 feet. And when you put a string of casing, we'll say 7-inch casing, through 7,000 feet of sediments, the annulus created, the annulus which exists between the dug hole, usually for 7-inch casing we'd drill a 9 5/8 hole, and we would cement those portions where we wanted to make an integrity in the annulus so that we wouldn't have vertical migration of oil, water, or other liquids in that annulus. But even in the uncemented annulus closed, one, the earth swelled, and the annulus between a 9 5/8 dug hole and a 7-inch casing would diminish. Partly, the mud would lithify and become a soil. Mud is soil. partly the Kennedys falling from up the hole, which falls down. So now then, the earth and the casing and the weight of the earth and the strength of that grip, the strength is so extensive that if there is consolidation, the casing will be shortened. Not only that, but there are distortions in terms of the flexion and twisting. In the case of the shear, the casing was distorted first in an S-shaped curve offset and finally sheared clear off. Well, the damage to casing, liners, and tubing, if you put tubing on a packer and the packer is below the consolidation dated, both the casing shorten and the tubing shorten. Partly the tubing will shorten in the spiral, curled spiral, and when you unbutton it at the surface, it'll pop out at you, scaring many people and producing wonder when the casing came, when the tubing come running out of the hole. So here I have a very extensive library called Casing Failures at 1600 feet, which was compiled in the first place by volunteer petroleum engineers, or one of the company's volunteer cooperative, I guess the word is, led by Union Pacific, in which all of the damaged pipe. One way to think about damaged pipe would to think if you have a pin cushion, or more a needle cushion, and you stuck it full of needles, you would have the start of 7-inch casing penetrating this 8 mile by 3 mile by mile and a half or so deep. And then you distorted that pin cushion, you would twist some of the pins, the needles, you twist the earth and you make it. This was going to be, and did contribute, to the final solution in that. Among other things, Stanford research and other observers became convinced of this fact, that in the unstable zones of consolidation, the casing would be shortened equal to the amount of consolidation, and that this study of damaged casing did do go quite a way towards limiting the zone of unstable zone or consolidation to certain portions by virtue of the frequency of various types. Might say that's a very laborious study, and the vocabulary is unique to petroleum engineering, subsurface geology, and probably is not digestible, not fully of much value, except to people familiar with casing, tubing, the vocabulary, and have some feeling for that this type, this reoccurrent type of damage was symptomatic. To give one example, the liners are hung. They're not cemented. They're not fixed to the casing. You may run a 5-inch liner inside of 7-inch casing, the liner being perforated. The perforations restrain the sand and allow the liquids, oil, gas, and water, to enter the wellbore. And it's hung on a series of what's called dogs or teeth that bite in the pipe. But in the presence of consolidation, the liner resisting being shortened will preferably climb up the casing rather than be shortened. Resist being shortened will climb up the casing. when it climbs up the casing, it breaks the seal between the in the annulus, between the 5-inch liner and the 7-inch casing. When the seal is broken, very often we got unrestrained flows of sand, so much so that the well was shut down right now, and you had to bail and sometimes circulate to get rid of all the sand. Well, these unrestrained flows of sand would show up completely spontaneously. Investigation showed that the liner didn't have a hole in it. Investigation showed that the liner was no longer sealed to the casing, and when it did it once, it would be, well, some kind of a freak. But we had sufficient of them that it convinced many people that subsidence was occurring in the oil sand because the telescoping of the liner into the 7-inch produced a very mean, expensive sand removal job and a resealing. And with sufficient abundance of those, we have said, I now agree that oil